Hello again, everyone. Jace from The Comic Source with another creator interview for you. This one is with the legendary creator Paul Levitz. He did some really classic runs on the Legion back in the day. That was where I first became a fan of his. But really, he's touched just about every part of the industry, with the possible exception of drawing comics throughout his long career. And most recently, he has the Dr. Fate title that just started with DC. I believe issue 2 just came out a few days ago. It was a real pleasure to talk to Paul. I've met him before at San Diego, and he's always a fun guy to talk to. Very insightful, very intelligent, very cerebral. So I'll let you go ahead and enjoy the interview, and be sure you're picking up Dr. Fate from DC Comics. And we'll talk to you next time. Hey, this is Jace from The Comic Source, here with comic creative legend Paul Levitz. How you doing today, Paul?
I'm okay. Enjoying Comic-Con.
Yeah, it's a unique experience, right? Every year.
It's an amazing place.
Well, you've worn many hats in your career. Publisher, board of directors for Boom, is that
mm-hmm.
right? Yeah, I know you teach, and you still write. They all exercise different creative muscles for you?
That's part of the fun. You know, the teaching gets me out of the house. If I was a full-time writer, I'd be locked in my room with a keyboard all day. I don't think I could take that at this point in life. The board of directors stuff lets me use some of the business knowledge I've accumulated over the years as an executive. The writing takes me back to the creative things about comics that first attracted me to the medium. I love the writing history about it. I've got a book on Will Eisner, champion of the graphic novel, coming out this fall from Abrams Comic Arts. So digging into the history, putting the pieces together, making sense out of it is fun. I can't draw comics, but pretty much everything else connected to it I've done at some point or another.
Yeah, and there was actually a sneak preview of that graphic novel in the souvenir book, right?
Yep, you have the chapter about the beginnings of the spirit itself.
Cool. Do you have a favorite? Is there one, if you had to choose, could you? Or do you like them all equally? Not to put you on the spot.
I don't know that it's an issue about liking them all equally. I like them for very different reasons.
Right, okay.
They touch different parts of my life. You know, I was really spoiled. I had one of the greatest jobs on the planet for a long time. Enormous fun. I had some stuff that sucked, like every job does.
Right.
But I think anyone who loves comics would happily have traded for my
sure.
problems.
Right.
So I came out of that very spoiled, and I had to kind of recreate some level of joy by putting several different things together.
Several different irons in the fire, so to speak.
Absolutely.
Okay, well, let's talk a little bit about your current title that just started, Dr. Fate from DC. First issue has already come out. I very much enjoyed it.
Thank you.
How much of the legacy, the character's been around for a long time, how much of the legacy do you plan on bringing into the new Dr. Fate going forward?
The legacy of Dr. Fate is actually fairly thin when you think about it. There were a few villains over the years who were specific to the character. Obviously, there was Kent Nelson, Inza, and then there were the later sort of Vertigo-esque incarnations. But it's not like writing Superman or Batman where
right.
there were 4,000 stories and 43 villains to choose from. I think if our plans hold, you'll see a lot of things that will connect this series to the legacy in one fashion or another, but I don't think that's going to be, okay, we finished the first story, now it's time for this villain who was in Dr. Fate in the 1940s. When we're done with that, we're going to go to something from the 1980s of Vertigo. There'll be a little bit from different periods of the past, but it's going to be in some interesting ways.
Right. So more incorporating the big picture of Dr. Fate, but not necessarily the tiny details that we've seen in the past.
There's a moment in, I think it's the third issue, Khalid has started medical school. It's not uncommon in immigrant families for children who have names in the tradition of their original family to adopt an Americanized name. And you might have a moment where Khalid starts introducing himself by an Americanized version of his name
okay.
at med school, as maybe his patients someday will be more comfortable with that name.
Right.
And what does that name have to do with his family? Might be something.
Okay, well, let's talk a little bit about Khalid specifically, the main character who becomes Dr. Fate. Do you think it just makes more sense to
have an Egyptian or a Middle Eastern descent to be Dr. Fate, being that it's so tied into that mythology?
Well, it turns out to, in this case, it's not very optional. There's very specific reasons why he's one of the very few people on the planet Earth who could possibly be doing that role.
So it finally makes sense in your,
hopefully,
mind. Right, okay. Now, what about the theme of fate? The first issue had a lot of Khalid being told, this is your fate, this is your, you know, I kept going back, okay, well, he's Dr. Fate, it's his fate. Is that fatalism going to be, I mean, is it, you know, his heritage?
The book is about fate. The book is about a character called Dr. Fate. It should have relevance in all of that. I think one of the things that particularly matters to young people today is the question of their fate and their destiny. Young people, I think maybe more than in any previous generation in America, when they come of age, aren't just about looking for a job. They're looking for a purpose. What their fate is going to be, what difference they're going to make in the world, matters enormously to them. And as a teacher, I get to spend a lot of time talking to 20-somethings who are in the middle of those decisions. I teach undergraduate and graduate kids, slightly different perspectives. But in both cases, yeah, they want to know that they can get a job that'll be able to let them pay the rent and have a car and all the good little things of life, afford a date. But they also want to make a difference. They want their fate to be something where, when they're done, the world will be a little different because they were here. And hopefully there'll be some echoes of that in this process. In Khalid's case, if he screws it up, there won't be a world for it. And if he does it right, he will pay some fateful prices, perhaps. But the world will be a existent and better place.
Do you worry about him being so tied to fate, there being actually him falling kind of prey to fatalism where he has no more choices? He doesn't necessarily see a way out?
I think the girls in his life might be a good influence on that issue.
Okay, fair enough. Also, speaking of Khalid, we've seen a big, and positively so, a big growth in diversity, especially these last few years. You've been in the industry so long. Do you feel like that's one of the biggest changes you've seen over the last few years?
I think it's one of the great things that's going on now. You know, I put it in the context that when comics started, so many of the tools of storytelling about people weren't available to comic book writers. You couldn't really write about death. You couldn't write about disease. You couldn't write about people's relationship to God. You really couldn't write about love in any sophisticated kind of fashion. So much of what is being human wasn't part of existence. Our ethnicity, our identity, not just in terms of our sexual identity, but how we define ourselves, is a very important part of our story. And if we're going to write better stories, if we're going to write stories that are appealing to a wider range, particularly of adult audiences, it's great to have those tools coming in. What's the difference between being a first-generation American and being a 47th-generation American? Gardner Fox, who created Fate, was descended through from people who were here for the Revolution. I remember seeing a Daughters of the American Revolution ancestral chart hanging in his kid's house one time when I was there. That would create a different mindset than my mindset as a first-generation American. I can't articulate and identify everything that makes me different because of that, but I can think about some of those things that are different, and I've been able to see some things that are different about that from my children, who are further removed from the immigrant experience and also further removed from my ethnic experience. My children have a Jewish father and an Italian mother. They have taken different paths in terms of how they've dealt with the religions that have been introduced to them in the course of their life. That's great story stuff. Let's use it. Let's have fun with it.
I agree completely. And something that just popped in my head as you were giving me that answer is the idea that society, looking back on it through history, are often judged by the stories, the fiction that they create. And so I feel like with the increase in diversity, it can only reflect better on us as our society today. Would you agree with that?
Well, the first thing I think we're judged on as a society in a time period is how we behave in that time. And do you sit in judgment of Thomas Jefferson based solely on the philosophic principles in his writing? Or do you sit in judgment including the fact that he was a slave owner and had a sexual relationship with one of his slaves, had many children with her? We don't really know for sure whether he and Sally Hemings had what we might today call a loving relationship. It took a long time before even that was acknowledged historically. Well, partly you judge Jefferson by the standards of his time, and you have to say, well, yeah, he was a slave owner. Everyone around him was a slave owner. Was he worse than the average guy at the time? Was he better than the average guy at the time? It's a piece of the story. I'm entirely sure that people will look back on our time and look at some of the things we're doing with the same distaste that we look back on the slave-owning period in history. But if we're doing a good job, they'll look back on our time with less distaste than they did on our parents and our grandparents. Stories are important in that. Stories help make that change. Did we get to the point of the Supreme Court rulings of the last week because Will and Grace was on TV? I can't give it causality, but I think it has something to do with
part
it.
Part of the big picture.
I'm not going to claim that a Legion of Superheroes story I wrote that included a gay marriage got the Supreme Court to declare gay marriage a constitutional right. But culture changes. And we have obligations as writers to do what we can to move the culture to what we think is a healthier world.
Fair enough. Speaking of story, I know you also have a creator-owned from Dark Horse, right? Brooklyn Blood?
Yep. I wouldn't particularly define it as creator-owned. I'm not a big fan of the term.
Okay.
But something that I developed with Tim Hamilton, who's the artist on it.
Okay. Would you say that's your big idea, or do you still have something in your back pocket, an idea that's percolating?
I'm not the big idea guy. I don't have notebooks full of I want to do this some days. I'm a learned writer. An editor or publisher calls up and says, we'd like you to do something, or I'm having lunch or a meeting with a publisher and say, what kind of stuff are you looking for? And I developed to suit. I like the intellectual challenge of trying to fit something. Mike Richardson's asked me for years to do something for them. When I had the freedom to do it, I said, okay, Mike, what would you like? He said, well, why don't you do something for Dark Horse Presents? We do these 8-page and issue serials, usually 3 issues on, 1 issue off. What can you build that would work like that? So I said, okay, 8 pages, so that kind of structure. A big superhero thing doesn't really work because you don't have enough room for lots of stuff to blow up and giant action sequences. Maybe I can do a police procedural, put a little supernatural element in it, a little serial killer in it that makes it more colorful. Where should I do that? You know, I grew up in Brooklyn. I've got a chance at an artist from the artist community of Brooklyn who knows the space. Maybe that'll make it richer, feel more interesting. We play from there.
Sounds great. I really appreciate the time, Paul. Hope you have a great convention.
Thank you
so much.
You too.